Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back for another great, exciting episode of the Writer's Block here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Richard Polinelli. I have been given command of the ship. God help us all. But we are going to get through this. Jim, a little under the weather tonight, so he's going to take the night off and have a nice little hot toddy or whatever else he wants to medicate himself with. So get better soon, Jim. In the meantime, I have in the co-pilot seat the very capable Bobby Jean Bell from Albuquerque. Miss Bobby Jean, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. What a fun read this was, right?
Yes, yes. We are eager to jump into this one because it was a great read, and we're picking it up in the into the series, so I'm gonna have to backtrack and go find out what we missed because it's an in character.
Yes.
Books. Tonight is a very talented author, and I'm basing that just off the one book I've read of his. He was that good. His book is Headshot, and I'm pretty sure you can kind of figure out where this one's going. Welcome to the show, and I hope I pronounced the first name right. Otho
Eskin. You did indeed.
Excellent.
Very
all
good.
Right.
You got it right.
You know, with these last minute things, I'm always wondering, well, I'll just try not to screw up too much and we'll get to the end. But yeah, thank you for being on tonight, Otho.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here or wherever we are.
we are in the great blue cyberspace is where we are. Your book, it's the second book of the series. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
The first one is called The Reflecting Pool, and this is Headshot. Same main character.
Yeah, the main character is Marco Zorn.
That's right.
And he is a very unique police officer.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like you to do is tell us a little bit about Marco first, and then tell us about what he's gotten himself into in Headshot.
Okay, well, I'll be happy to do that. Well, Marco Zorn is, as you say, a police officer. He's actually a homicide detective in the D.C. police. He's a very unusual guy because he has very expensive tastes. He likes classic sports cars. He collects art and music, and he cannot live on the salary that he's paid as a D.C. police officer. So he makes money on the side, sometimes not entirely legal, most not legal, kind of lying. He works for people who are not very nice, some of which are very dangerous, and some of whom should probably be in jail. But they pay him a good salary. He has a very strong moral compass. There are certain things he won't do. He does not assassinate people. He does not go out and kill somebody in cold blood, although he can be very violent if the need arises. But he tends to be his own boss. He doesn't believe in rules. He certainly doesn't believe in the rules that the D.C. Police Department has passed down on him. They disapprove of what he does on the side. But he's such a good detective, and he has gotten so many convictions and sent so many bad people to jail that they have to put up with him. but they don't approve of his sideline, and therefore he walks a rather fine line between the approval and disapproval of his bosses. He tends to be not like authority. He particularly doesn't like political appointees in the business. He tends to disapprove of bosses, and he has his own agenda in which he will follow, and he gets himself into some real trouble that way. But he there are certain things he won't do. He's a very straightforward, clean character who will not violate the law in any serious way. But in the minor ways, he cuts it very, very close. He does not, among other things, he doesn't carry a gun, or rarely does, occasionally, and which is the rules of these of any police department. You're expected, as a policeman, to have a gun even when you're off duty. He does not like guns. He does use them, and in headshot, he actually uses them several times in a pretty violent way, but that's in self-defense. He doesn't, all things being equal, he would prefer not to use a gun. He believes in, and he's confronting with somebody who's dangerous or is doing something or wants to do something illegal. He tries to talk him out of it. He tries to negotiate. He'd rather talk than shoot. And he's very successful at that. He's very clever, and he can outthink most opponents. In the case of Headshot, the book that just came out in December, his opponent is an international assassin and not the kind of person who you can talk out of committing a crime. So he's stuck there. But normally, he'll try to work it out. He'll try to come to some kind of deal, some kind of compromise, so that nobody gets hurt, which is what he wants to do. He does not explain in detail what his aversion to guns is. That's explained in later books that I'm working on now. He's not making a political stand. It's not just being eccentric. He has a deep and emotional reason for not wanting to have a gun, which he can then use and regret. So he'll do almost anything to achieve his aims without using violence. Or at least not violent gun at gunpoint. So that's basically his character. Anything else you want me to add to that?
Well, I think Bobby Jean's got a question for you.
I'm so delighted to have you on the show with us tonight. Like any good thriller, this gets you from sentence one right to the last page with lots of twists and turns. Right, Richard? Were there things that popped up where you were like, what? Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's what I hope to achieve anyway.
Yes. You surely did that right in the very beginning. So it's not really a spoiler alert because a reader will experience it in the first few pages. I found it so interesting how you set us up with this character. You know, he comes home and he realizes something is amiss, and he's very smart, and he's got a lot of street sense in how he sets off alarms around his house. I thought it was a really fun way that we meet him. I know it's not a spoiler alert because our readers will get the idea to open the book that way.
Well, I wanted to open the book with a surprise and some violence because I want to hook the reader to find out the reader wants to know. Who is the person? What's behind this attempted murder of the main character? And how does the main character get out of this? So I start off in this book and in the other books that I'm writing with a fairly violent scene, which I hope intrigues the reader. And then as to how Marco Zorn gets out of this, there's an attempted. Somebody tries to kill him in the first couple of lines, and he doesn't have a gun, and so he can't protect himself. So he has to use his ingenuity to defeat his, at least temporarily, to defeat whoever is after him, which he does. And but of course he doesn't know who that is, and for he doesn't really know until well into the novel what's going on, why somebody wanted to get rid of him, until he figures out how he can neutralize this mm-hmm. person who turns out to be an international professional mm-hmm. assassin. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Richard, do you have a question?
Well, I was just, as I was reading the book, you've got Marco, who basically somehow or another manages to get paid by three different agencies to do the same job. And it reminded me for some reason of the Clint Eastwood movie back in the 70s, The Iger Sanction, where you have this.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. He messes him up and says, hey, you know, we'll give you 20 grand or whatever the fee was. Yeah, go dock this person off. And he'll do it. And with Marco, it's like, you know, he's this normal police officer who goes out and does his job. And then he gets these assignments and it throws him into all sorts of chaos. I mean, you really had you had all sorts of stuff coming down. And what was interesting to me was you have more than one murder thread running through this story.
That's right.
Yes, and somehow you tie them. Yeah, you tied them all together.
Yeah.
Well, I hope so. Yes, that was a challenge for me in writing the book. I wanted to have two different themes going on simultaneously, but they had to somehow or other be connected at the end. And when I was about halfway through the book, I wasn't quite sure how it was.
Another thing that that I found so interesting for a thriller is how many strong women you have in this book. I started to kind of make a list because I'll just be honest with you, as a reader, I get confused sometimes in thrillers that are international in scope between the names and what countries they're with. And
we all do. I confess to the same problem as a reader. Yes.
But we have a really great woman character, Nina. Is it Wojciech? Yes. Is that how we'd say her last name?
That's how we would say it. That's the way it would be said.
The Prime Minister of Montenegro. Tell me a little bit about this character. You know, why did you choose to have a woman? And she's such an interesting woman with such an interesting background. You want to talk a little bit about her?
Well, yes. Well, I like to have women characters, strong women characters. As you say, there are quite several of them in this book. There's Marco Zorn's assistant and partner. There is a woman who was a former Marine who was in charge of protecting this visiting Prime Minister from Montenegro. There's a senior FBI official, Carla Lowry, mm-hmm. who's a former lover of Marco Zorn's, but they don't. And then there is his former lover, who was an actress, Victoria West, who was murdered very early on in the mm-hmm. in the book. I don't think I'm a spoiler there because that's part of the main plot. And so he's one of the things he's trying to do is find out who is the murderer of his former lover, this great actress, and as well as finding out who's after him. They all combine, as you say, in the end. But mm-hmm. Yes, I like strong women characters, and I think they're fun to write and they're fun to imagine. Nina Wojciech is a totally fictional character, but the country of Montenegro I've been to a number of times, visited it. I served in what was then Yugoslavia for several years, many, many years ago, but longer ago than I care to remember. But the country itself is fascinating. It's an Italian name for the country that's actually called Cernogora, and then these Black Mountain, and that, a lot of the character from, which is basically a very violent society. But this prime minister, Nina Wojcik, was a young woman who had come to went to the United States to study, and then her country was being ruled actually by Russia. It was part of the Russian area of influence, and their stooges were running the country as a dictatorship. And I've been following that part of the world for years, and this isn't. I don't pretend that this is an accurate description of the country of Montenegro as it is now, but there are other countries in that area. We're seeing it now in Georgia and Ukraine. One of the characters, Nina Wojcik, is based very, very loosely on a democratic leader in the country of Belarus, which is just a little bit further north. It's Montenegro is in the Balkans, and Belarus is right between Poland and Russia.
I got to jump in here. We're up against a hard break, so just hang on for a second. We're going to take a break here, and we're going to hear from the good folks at LA Talk Radio.
If you have never listened to LA Talk Radio, then you need to treat yourself to one of the best online live radio stations around. If you have listened to talk radio and, let's be honest, found yourself saying, I can do that better, well then, LA Talk Radio wants you. See, we have 50-minute slots available all day, Saturdays and Sundays included, and we are looking to fill those slots with high-quality broadcasts from talk hosts who are in the know. www.latalkradio.com and click the link that says Become a Host. Then just follow the simple instructions. Before you know it, you'll be joining the legion of radio folks that got their start right here at LA Talk Radio. That's www.latalkradio.com. You have something to say. Now let's hear it. LA Talk Radio.
And we are back on the Writer's Block here at LA Talk Radio. We're talking with Otho Eskin, who has written a very great book called Headshot. And Miss Bobby Jean, do you recall the phone number in case anybody would like to call in? Because I don't have it.
Oh, no. I don't have it.
We will try to get that for the next break.
Is it a phone number I would know?
No, this is a number straight to the studio. So
I can't help you.
Mirko, try to get that number for you. Hopefully Jim is listening and will text it to me real quick. But in the meantime, we were talking about the main character and the region of the world that she comes from. And I believe you were talking a little bit about Belarus.
Yes, that's right. It was, as you may or may not know, that there's been it's been dominated by a dictator for, well, it must be 30, 40 years now, and he's still running the country. And there's been a democrat movement for democratic reform, and one of the leaders in that movement, probably the figurehead, is a young woman, she's now been driven out of the country. She's, I think, in Ukraine. I've lost track of her. Any case, the character of Nina Wojcik is very, very roughly based on this. A young woman who is not really a politician. She just hates the dictatorship and wants to get back to freedom and people and civil rights, human rights in her own country. And so she led a protest against the dictator, and unlike the real world, In my book, she achieves that and throws the dictator out, and the dictator is killed. I won't go into more detail because the plot thickens at about that point. I just thought these women, and there's no more than one of them in Eastern Europe who are standing up and showing incredible bravery and fortitude to in the struggle for human rights and democracy in their countries. So she's very vaguely based on this concept. The actions are just totally my own imagination.
Right. Yeah, we let me bump in here real quick. We actually have a phone number if you would like to call in and talk to our guest tonight. It is 323-203-0815. You can call in. You can ask him anything you want about his book and his character. You can ask me anything you want, but I'm guaranteeing nothing as far as what my answer will be. And you know, Bobby Jean might have something for you too. So give us a call, 323-203-0815. And in the meantime, we're...
Hello?
Oh, I think, did we just lose Richard? Are you still with us?
I'm with you.
Okay. Well, we sometimes our internet connections, even mine, will go a little soft. So maybe that's just happened with Richard. So,
I hope so.
There is a motive that seems to run through this book, and I would say it's revenge.
Yes, you're quite right.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Again, I know we don't want to do spoiler alerts, but it seems to be a very strong motive.
Yes, well, indeed. There are several themes that run through the book involving vengeance, one of which is why this international assassin is after Marco Zorn, who is essentially just a D.C. cop. But he was involved in the violent death of the brother or the former dictator of Montenegro, and the dictator's brother is out to revenge or anything away. But in addition to that, Marco Zorn's motive, in addition to protecting himself, is to find out the murderer of his former lover. She, this actress who was appearing in a play in Washington, preparing to go to New York. And on the last night, and the very final scene, she shot him, and he knows that it's murder, because he can tell right away that it's not suicide. Mm-hmm. So he's determined to find out who was responsible, who killed her, right there on stage in front of hundreds of people in the audience, so that he's got a vengeance motive himself, and then somebody else got a vengeance motive against him.
I briefly dealing with a domestic assassin called Spectrum Internet, so I'm back.
Well, congratulations.
Welcome back, Richard.
I'm telling you. Anyway, the one thing I noticed about Marco, and if this came up while I was gone, I do beg everybody's pardon, but this guy he must have one heck of a Rolodex, because he can drop what he's doing and go to a federal prison in the middle of nowhere, which, you know, and pretty much tell the warden of that prison, here's what you're going to do for me, now go do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah. I mean, this guy's backstory, I mean, I'm assuming the first book in the series deals with most of it, but I mean, you must have endless material for this guy just on his backstory alone.
That's right. Well, of course, I invent most of it, but of course, I'm assuming that Marco's own character is a person of very powerful in intellect and resourcefulness, and he's a terribly, totally cool character. So he never loses he doesn't lose his cool ever. So he can find himself in a very dramatic, dangerous situation and can cope without almost instantly and instinctively. And of course, he's been doing this for some years, and part of his experience has been to dealing with some people who are not altogether very good, and that comes out during when he goes to the maximum security prison in Colorado to interview a prisoner there, and has to deal with the warden, whom he already knows and has some influence over because of the experience. So I rely on the fact that Marco Zorn has all kinds of checkered background, mm-hmm. and he can use this background as he sees fit to achieve his ends, which he always does. Of course, that's the nature of a thriller.
Right. I have a question, and I'm looking at our time. I know we just have a few minutes before our next break, but this is the second book. So has he changed from book one?
No, not really. No, it's the same character. He's still just as ornery and unpredictable as he is in Headshot. We in Headshot we learn a little bit more about him. We do know in the original first the Fleck, which he had a very traumatic experience as a teenager when he revenged the death of his sister, older sister. Mm-hmm. And this is again the revenge theme comes in. And he killed a person in revenge for the death of his sister. And he that is an action which haunts him. He doesn't regret it. He did. He's confident they did the right thing. But the act itself is very unpleasant for him, and he wants to avoid getting a situation where that ever happens again. Well, he can't entirely avoid it.
So,
are
the readers aware of that? By note, we learn
a little bit. Yes. There is a scene in which Marco Zorn goes back to his family home, which is in Maine, and talks to his one of the other sisters. And a little bit comes out. Yes, you know that what happened, but you don't really know how he feels about it.
Uh-huh.
I try to reveal a little bit more in each book about Marco Zorn because I want to keep him essentially a mystery. He's a very strange and eccentric person, not in a bad sense. He's actually a very decent person, but he's very odd, I admit, for a policeman. And I reveal a little bit in each book. I've just finished the third book, which I won't go into, but you learn more about that event and about how he feels about what he and mine to guns and knives and other lethal weapons.
But he's very skilled when he has to use them.
Oh yes,
he's a dead shot, and in Headshot, another assassin is on his way to kill the Prime Minister of Montenegro, and Marco Zorn takes him out on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, a kind of dramatic place to take, an unlikely place, but that's where this story leads us.
Yeah, I mean, it was you have not knowing the character from the first book. I mean, it struck me that here you have a police officer who has to be proficient in guns, and he is proficient in guns when we see him using one. But it's so great for a character in the main character in a thriller. So that's something I enjoyed about him. I'm gonna hopefully. Hopefully our engineer is ready for this because we're going about 20 seconds early. But I do want to go ahead and get to our next break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to you a little bit about your process going into, writing a series and writing a book. So we'll let you take a break, grab a sip of your favorite adult beverage like the rest of us. And we're going to hear from our good friends at Tuscany Bay Books.
I was sitting in my private office, looking out my private window, dropping private eye drops in my private eye, when a tall blonde walked by, and now you ask me how I know she was tall? My office is on the second floor. And then there was a knock on the door, so I jumped out of my chair, I tripped over the couch, I unlatched the latch, and there stand a beautiful blonde, holding a manuscript, and I said, hi. She said, hi. What can I do for you? I said, well, she said, I have a manuscript, and I want my book published. And I said, well, you've come to the right place. This is Tuscany Bay Books, and that's exactly what we do. Why don't you come in, and we'll have a drink on it. But all I have is a bottle of ink. So we drank that and stood around feeling mighty blue. But You don't have to feel mighty blue, because at Tuscany Bay, we'll not only format your book, we'll proofread it, we'll edit it, we'll get it printed, and we'll bitch you a cover that will make your head spin and make you so proud of the work that you've done. Tuscany Bay Books, you can't go wrong, and you can find us on the web at www.tuscanybaybooks.com. And if you see a blonde walk by holding a manuscript and a bottle of blue ink, just say hi.
Oh, Tuscany Bay Books, where you don't have to be here, by golly, it helped. We are back on the Writer's Block here on LA Talk Radio. Our guest tonight is Otho Eskin. And if you want to ask him a quick question, by all means, please call us at 323-203-0815, and we will get you on the air. You can ask him your question. But in the meantime, we're going to talk about a little bit about how you approach this series. I mean, what was your process as far as getting it ready? Do you have an outline for all of the books, or are you just kind of playing it by ear a little bit?
I kind of fake it. For the first book, well, the first thing I did mentally is create the main character. That the whole book depends on that. If your main character is intriguing or interesting, or then the reader will follow, and then the plot is almost secondary to the main character, at least in my view. So I created that in my head, more or less. Then when I actually started the book, and this goes for both books, The Reflecting Pool and for Headshot and for my next one, I'd start off with a bang, so to speak, with an act of violence, which I hope will intrigue the reader and encourage them to continue reading to find out what's going on. I also know pretty much how it's going to end. I mean, obviously, Marco Zorn triumphs, and I hope I'm not giving away too much by saying that. But the beginning and the end, the first few pages and the last few pages, I pretty well have in my head. It's the in-between part that I have to work on. So I actually do not know an outline. I basically create problems and issues and dangers for the main character, and then try to figure out how to get him out of it. And so that's the process. And I did it for both The Reflecting Pool and Headshot. I wouldn't have known at the beginning that what the main themes of the book were until I started getting into it and writing the scenes. And that's the way I work all the time. And I it seems to me it works out. Now, sometimes I get in trouble. I get my Marco Zorn into a fix that I can't figure out how to get him out of. But then, of course, that's what deletion is about. And it's a great advantage of the computer. I go back and say, oh, I didn't mean to do that.
we'll just delete. You had mentioned you're kind of dropping little tidbits about Marco as you go. And again, I guess my question would be, is that, did you plan on doing that? Or is this just something that's kind of organically developed as you've written the books?
I think more organically developed. I don't want to tell everything about him, because that's too much exposition. I don't want to have a chapter devoted to him, because this is a thriller mystery and there's a lot going on, and I want to keep the pace going. So I didn't want to have a pause in which I go back and explain the main character, or indeed any of the characters. I give them a background information in dribs and drabs, but not in full detail exposition for any of them.
Because you don't do it dated with that little bit of mystery, you keep the reader wanting to come back for the next book and the next book. I asked that because I have a character I created, and a producer out in San Francisco was talking about who I would cast to play that character. Yeah. And I listed some names, and he goes, well, what if they come and say, we want Will Smith to do this? I said, okay, that'd be great, because it would bring money in, but you're going to have to explain to me how Will Smith is the son and grandson of Russian immigrants. When you can do that, we'll talk about Will Smith. Because I hadn't dropped that yet. That's in the next book. That you know, his family history is coming. So I was wondering, as you were talking earlier about that, you know, have you kind of mapped out what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, or it seems like you're going to do the pantsing routine, which is fine. It kind of makes it interesting sometimes. Bobby, you had a quick question?
Are there some characters from the first book that reappear in the second book?
Yes, there are. Not all of them, but the chief of the detectives, the head of the homicide division, is a character, not a main character. The head of the criminal investigation division of the FBI is in each of the books, and sometimes small. In each of the books, Marco Zorin has a partner, and the partner changes in each one. That's my overall concept, so that he has a new partner in every story. And each partner is different. Some are men, some women, some old, some experienced. And so I try to keep some continuity going for those who may want to go back and more. But the reader, having read the earlier book, you don't need to. You can understand everything that's going on in Headshot even without ever reading The Reflecting Pool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You touched on, I think, why you picked Montenegro. I think you had been there. It was yes. An area of the world you've been. Why did you put Marco in D.C.? Is there a connection there?
There's the connection is me. I've lived most of my life in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. I've grew up here, so I know the city very well. I've lived in many parts. I was in the United States Foreign Service, so I've served in other countries and in other capitals, and most recently in Berlin some years ago, not recently. But I know Washington more than any other city, and I find the city of Washington just fascinating as a character. So one of the sub themes that I do in both books, and in I expect to be doing in future books, is describe the city a little bit. In the case of the Reflecting Pool, you see the criminal side of the city, the gangs and the drug wars, but you also see the White House and the federal bureaucracy, and I play with that throughout the next book. It's more about the bureaucracy, but also the federal agencies that are involved in tracking down drugs. So I have a lot of experience physically with the city, how it looks, what it feels like, but also just and traditionally in mainlanders who have their own aims and agendas, not always in harmony with one another. And I just thought that's an interesting thing. And also just, people know the big cities like New York and Chicago and San Francisco, but I don't, there aren't that many books, at least that I know of, that are centered on Washington. And I thought it's kind of unique and exotic city, even though it's just a normal town in many respects. But it is a center of enormous power and conflict, and I try to draw on that as the background to Marco Zorin's play.
The question.
There's only one question we ask every week from our guests. Do you experience ever writer's block? If you do, how do you get around it? And if you don't, what do you think about it?
Well, the quick answer to your question is no. If I sit down in front of my computer or a blank piece of paper, I'm ready to go. I love to write. I love the actual experience of putting words together. Sometimes, of course, the words make no sense at all, and I have to delete them. But the actual act of writing is very stimulating to me. As long as I've got the characters right, I just throw the characters in and see what they do. Sometimes I have the feeling that the characters write themselves. I'm sure you've heard that from others. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy that experience. So and an unusual character and put them together with another unusual character, I enjoy the experience of seeing how the chemistry works. So I guess the answer is no writer's block. Maybe I should, but I don't.
I think we experienced that a lot in this book. Unusual characters meeting to, you know, the one character that has the violin. Yes. Even our main character that we meet in the beginning, Cyprian Voss. Yes, I mean, there are some really interesting characters in this, in Marco's life.
Indeed, yes. Some of them are short-lived, but yeah.
Do you ever catch yourself when you've got a unique character who has a unique way of speaking or an accent that you spend a lot of time writing? Do you ever catch yourself talking and writing like that character for a little bit after you're done?
I try to avoid accents. I find it as a reader difficult to manage. If somebody writes with an accent, unless it's just a very slight, this one, I lose patience. So I don't want to do that to my readers. I want my in terms of just writing, my main aim is to make it as smooth and as welcoming as I can, so nobody has to stumble or trip over a sentence or a paragraph and say, what the hell was that about?
Yeah, it happens. We gotta jump in real quick. We got one last ad we gotta deal with, so hang in there for a minute. And in the meantime, sure, let us hear about our good friends at Creative Edge Publicity.
Okay, you've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcast, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your work and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity.
All right, and we are back. And Bobby Jean, we got a couple of minutes. Did you have one last unasked question on the list, or?
How many hours a day do you write?
There you go.
Usually I start around noon and go to about 6. So that's about five or six mm-hmm. hours. Sometimes I have to stop and pay bills or answer the phone or do other routine things that everybody does. But I try to block out a time. And when I get started and when I'm on a run, I don't stop. I try not to stop. Of course, the phone rings and it's my agent or something. Of course, I do. But if Hollywood calls, I will take a break. But I try to put in 4 or 5, 6 hours a day, I don't always live up to that. But that's my aim, and I, as I say, I enjoy it. It's not a burden when I get out.
Yeah, I think most writers, agree with that. We have set goals. Life gets in the way. You can't do anything about that, but you try to hit the target as much as you can. And sometimes you get on a roll and you look up and it's been 10 hours. You're like, what the heck? What happened?
Right.
Where'd that come from? Also, in the last couple of minutes we have here, can you tell us where we can find you on the internet and how folks can find your books?
Okay. Well, I have a homepage, which is othoeskin.com, which I think tells you a lot about my background, what I've done. I was a playwright before I was a novelist, so there are a number plays that were produced, and also it tells you a little bit where to buy the book in case there's some people out there who haven't yet had that pleasure. So you can get your local Noble. They're happy to sell you the book. And I encourage you to use, but I encourage you to use bookstores. They need your help.
Oh yeah, yeah. Especially after the last couple of years, I think there's a lot of bookstores out there hurting. Okay, well, Alta, we appreciate you coming on tonight and talking about Headshot. It's a great book, and so it gets our official writer's block seal of go buy this book and read it. And as soon as book three comes out, I'm going to be reading that one, so I'm pretty sure Bobby Jean will as well. Hang out for a couple of minutes afterwards, after we wrap the show up, because we always talk to our guests a little bit afterwards.
Sure.
I got a couple. Oh, yeah. Well, we got a couple of quick notes here. If you want to see what in the world goes on behind the scenes while we're recording this live, we have a video channel. And you can go to the Tuscany Bay Books website at tuscanybaybooks.com. Scroll all the way down to the bottom. You will see the writer's block. Click on that. It will not only give you links to all of the audio shows that we've done, I think all the way back to 2015, Bobby Jean, has it been that long?
2014. I want to say May of 2014.
So
we're
in
our seventh year.
Yeah, you can listen to every show that ever's been, and all the shows that we have been able to video record will also be listed there, so you can see all sorts of stuff. And somebody in post-production has a little too much time on his hands. I had a little fun with last week's show, so if you watched Young Frankenstein, you'll know exactly what clip I played at the end. So you can go there and check that out. We do have Tuscany Bay Books has a book coming out this Tuesday. It is the second book in the White Ops series, Politics Kills by Declan Finn. The first book set all sorts of records with our publishing house, and we are thrilled about that. And we're hoping the second book does the same. So you can check that one out. Next week, our guest is Robin Smith, who has put together a very interesting coloring book, almost a comic book. A coloring book. It's called Steampunk Menagerie.
Oh.
And we are going to be talking to her about that as well. And I looked at a few of the images. It's interesting. You might not want to color all that in because it looks great without the color, or you might want the color. Who knows? But in the meantime, we are going to have to wrap this thing up because we're right up against the time limit here. So I want to thank you, Bobby Jean Bell, for riding shotgun with me at the last second here. And
we're going to hope
Jim gets better soon and gets back here next week to talk to Robin. Got to thank the bookie for bringing on these great guests that we have every week. She does a fantastic job. And without her efforts, we are not here. Basically. And also want to thank Sam Hassan back at the studio on the 49th floor of the LA Talk Radio building, who keeps this thing running and managed to keep it running even after Spectrum tried to eject me from the show for some reason. We'll have a word with them for that. But in the meantime, we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.